Ready to roll? Nice camera action. This is the Geirus, Inyani Geirus number 2, conversion issues, which are a major part of the Beis Din docket. I mean, here at the CRC, we deal with Geirus not only for the Chicago area and for what we might call Chicagoland, but really for the entire Midwest region. So we deal with Geirus matters involving Memphis, Tennessee, for example, or Des Moines, Iowa, or Omaha, Nebraska, or Dallas, Texas, sometimes Houston, sometimes all the way up north in Edmonton, Canada, sometimes as far out west as the Bay Area in California. We deal with many different Geirus cases, and therefore this is a major part of our practice. So we started last week speaking about some of the issues relating to Geirim. It should be understood that this is not only a ritualistic process, but it involves human beings, and it involves a certain sensitivity that's supposed to be extended to people who are Geirim, Vav Tem es Ager. There's a question as to whether Vav Tem es Ager, the mitzvah, is applicable during the process of a Geirus itself. If you identify somebody as a Ger Tzedek, you already have the obligation to start extending this extra level of solicitude, this extra level of affection and compassion. Sounds a little bit from the Lashon of the Rambam, that the Rambam holds Vav Tem es Ager kicks in after somebody has already converted and not necessarily before the conversion. However, from the Ria Barceloni, who says that the mitzvah of converting somebody in the first place is a manifestation of the mitzvah of Vav Tem es Ager, sounds like the conversion process itself is a fulfillment of Vav Tem es Ager, and therefore you have to be especially loving. There are midrashim that also seem to indicate that one is supposed to be very gentle with Geirim. So why is it that you're supposed to be very gentle with Geirim? That would seem to also indicate that this is part of the process of Vav Tem es Ager, that it should be Dochen es Ager Gimel Pa'amim. You're supposed to discourage a Ger three times, but the Medrash Rabbah and Medrash Rus says Bachutz lo yalin Ger. It's a pasuk in Iyov, says that Liolam Yehei Smol Doche V'yami Mekarev, that you're Doche with your left hand, but you're Mekarev, you bring the Ger closer with your right hand. And that's why I suggested that Hillel was particularly sensitive with the three candidates that came in front of him, and each one came with an unreasonable demand. Teach me Torah on one foot. Teach me, I only want to learn Torah Shebiktav, not Torah Shebapeh. I only want to convert to become Kohen Gadol. And Shammai had a lot of intolerance for them. He drove them away waving a heavy brick, Ba'ama Sabinyan. And Hillel was very forbearing and very understanding, and eventually brought them to conversion. And the Gemara says, "Lo'olam yehi anvasan kehillel v'lo kaptan keshamai," that you should always be an anvasan kehillel. And it appears from the Gemara in Shabbos, that sugya, that the context of being an anvasan kehillel, of being particularly forbearing and gentle like Hillel, is specifically applicable in the context of Geirus in order to bring righteous converts. We only want the righteous converts. We don't want people who are not sincere converts, but to bring the righteous converts, tachas kanfei hashchina. And in fact, that's what the Gemara says, that at the end of the process, those Geirim that Hillel had converted, they all got together and they had a picnic or something. They all met up with each other and they said, if not for the anvasanuso, if not for the gentle demeanor and humble demeanor of Hillel, then we would have been deprived from coming tachas kanfei hashchina. One thing that's important to emphasize is that Geirus is a double-edged sword. Why do I say it's a double-edged sword? Because the Gemara indicates it's a double-edged sword. The Gemara says, "Kashin Geirim Risoke Sapachas." We spoke about that, the statement of Rabbi Chelbo, that converts are as vexing to the Jewish people as a wart on the skin. It's like a simon of tzaraas. But on the other hand, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were punished for not accepting Timna. Timna was from the royal family of Seir, and she wanted to convert to Judaism. According to the Medrash, Judaism was just in its infant stages at that point. Avram had spread monotheism to the world, and there was the beginning of the observance of mitzvos by the Avos. But it's considered like they represented whatever Judaism was at that point in time. And Avraham was bringing people, Tachas Kanfei Yashkina, he was bringing Megayer people. There was a notion, and it says, Avraham Megayer es Anoshim, Besara Megayer es Anoshim. There was some notion of gear, of conversion that was going on at that point in time. So apparently, according to the Medrash, Timna really wanted to convert to Judaism very badly, and she was rejected by all the Avos. That's what the Medrash indicates. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, everybody rejected Timna. Finally, she gave up, and she had to settle for a son of Esav. Esav had a son named Eliphaz, and Timna settled to be a Pelegish, to be a mistress, a concubine for Eliphaz, and they had a son, Amalek. Didn't work out so well for the Jewish people. And the Gemara indicates that had Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov been more forbearing in terms of accepting her candidacy, then things would have worked out better. You wouldn't have had Amalek born from Timna and Eliphaz. She would have been able to convert. She would have, I don't know, have been one of the Imals, but she would have been a more righteous woman. She would have had righteous Jewish descendants, and things would have worked out much better. So Tosfos, in Maseches Yibamah, Daf Kuftes, asks a question. The actual text of the Gemara seems to reinforce this theme that it can be a bad thing to accept converts. It says, Ra achara tavol makabli gerim. That's what the Gemara says, that the bad after bad, it's just a cascade of bad things, will happen if you accept converts. It sounds like you shouldn't be accepting converts. So Tosfos says so, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were punished for not accepting Timna. So the Tosfos says that it really all depends. That when is it ra achara? When is it a bad thing to accept converts? Converts is hecha the Messianos on these Gaia. Says that's when you proselytize them. That's when you actively and proactively seek to have people convert to Judaism. So we're not supposed to be evangelists that run around and say that everybody has to convert to Judaism. We don't think that the whole world has to convert to Judaism. And we're not such an abundant people. We don't need the entire world to be Jewish. But there is a notion that the righteous among the Gentiles have a place in the world to come. We don't feel that in order for your soul to be saved, you have to become Jewish. So Tosfos says that it's considered to be improper to go and to convince people to become Jewish, to try to convert them actively, to persuade them to join the Jewish faith. Tosfos says there's a second type of activity which also falls in the category of Ra Achara Tavol Makabla Gerim. It's also considered to be very improper, and that is Hecha the Makabla Nosam Miyad. If you accept the convert right away, without testing the mettle of the convert's sincerity and their commitment. If a person just shows up to the door and says, I want to convert, you say, great, here's the mikvah, jump in. So that's also considered to be improper. You're supposed to dissuade and discourage, just like we just read in Megillas Rus, how Naomi dissuaded Rus 3 times from converting to Judaism. She said, Shobna v'nasai lechna. The Medrash says, if you count the number of times that Naomi told Rus to turn back, she said Shobna. The word Shobna means turn back. She said the word Shobna 3 times. So we learn from the fact that she said Shobna 3 times that we're all supposed to say to convert Shobna, you should turn back, on 3 different occasions. That's why we learn. So Tosfos says that if you accept the ger too precipitously, or you actively seek to enlist the individual to become a convert to the Jewish faith, so that's considered to be highly improper, and that's considered to be a punishable offense. That's considered to be very bad. However,
that's not mocking, though, right?
It could be the conversion would still be a valid conversion afterwards, right. But it's an improper conversion. Right. But Tosfos says, however, when you have a convert who comes on their own, that they indicate that they have decided to join the Jewish faith through their own free choice and their own volition, and they demonstrate a persistence and an earnestness in persevering and remaining involved in the process of conversion until they finally demonstrate a full-fledged long-term commitment, l'shem shemayim, that they're doing it for the sake of heaven. So then it becomes a mitzvah to facilitate and to perform the conversion. So that is what is considered to be the mitzvah. So we see it's a double-edged sword, because in the event that you accept somebody too precipitously, or you recruit the person improperly, so then you've committed an aveira. So then it's a very bad thing. On the other hand, in the event that the person comes to you, the person comes to the non-Jewish person, comes to the Beis Din, and demonstrates an earnest desire to join the Jewish faith, and you reject them, so then that also is an aveira. So therefore, it's very important for a Beis Din to be very careful not to accept people precipitously, but at the same time, also not to reject individuals who are very earnest and who really desire to become part of the Jewish people. So why then did Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov reject the candidacy of Timna? If Timna really was very sincere, what's the test of sincerity? The test of sincerity we also learn from Megillas Rus. The Pasuk says in Megillas Rus that after Naomi tried to discourage Rus from converting, on three different occasions it says, "Vateira ki misametze si lalecha sita, vatechta ledaber eleo." Then Naomi saw that Rus was extremely persistent. She wasn't going away. She wasn't going away. Matishak or Palacha Mosava Rustav Kaba. The other daughter-in-law, Orpah, who eventually became the mother of Galyas, right? So she just gave a hug, meaning a goodbye hug and kiss to her former mother-in-law. After Naomi's son, whom she was married to, Chilion, died. So Orpah left. But Ruth Dovkabah, Ruth just remained clinging to her. She was clinging. She wouldn't let go. So you see that the person's just not going to let go, that they insist that they're going to latch on to the Jewish faith no matter what. So then the Pasuk says, "Vatechtala daber eleo." At that point in time, you're supposed to stop discouraging the person from converting, and you're supposed to facilitate the conversion. In fact, the Gemara says that at the point in which you see that the person is really sincere, that they want to accept all of the mitzvahs of the Torah, so then, shihuya mitzvah lo mashinan. Then we say that malin osomiyad, mabilin osomiyad, we have to perform the conversion right away without any delay whatsoever, because it's a real mitzvah. So one of the questions that the Meforshim ask is, if it's a real mitzvah, why isn't it counted as a mitzvah? So we said maybe it's included after Mesagir, after Reyecha Kamocha, after Es Hashem. Maybe it's included in one of these other categories. So Rav Gedalia Felder, who is the author of the Nachlas Tzvi, the Yisodei Yeshurun, is a great rabbi in Toronto. His son, Rav Aaron Felder, was the Av Beis Din in Philadelphia. He used to come to Chicago on occasion to participate in Geirus himself. He would perform conversions here in Chicago for a period of time, for a few years or so, before he was Nifter, about 5 years or so, I think he was Nifter. So the father of Rav Aaron Felder, also a tremendous Talmid Chacham, was Rav Gedalia Felder. So he wrote a book on the laws of Geirus. He wrote a number of svarim, in which he wrote compendiums of laws of different subjects. He wrote a lot of books about Hilchos Shabbos, very, very fascinating. He has a likut of lots of different shitos and opinions, all written in a very engaging way, with his own opinions thrown in. So he did the same with Hilchos Gittin. He did the same with Hilchos Geirus. So in his Sefer Nachlas Tzvi, the Hilchos Geirus, he suggests that maybe the reason why it's not listed as a mitzvah is because we have this double-edged sword component, that sometimes it's not a mitzvah to accept geirim, that sometimes it could be a big aveira if you accept the geir precipitously. And he says that we have this notion of dokin es geir gimel pa'amim. You're supposed to discourage the geir three times, so we can't call it a mitzvah. If you have to go through this protocol, the first year you're obligated to discourage the geir. It's only at the very, very end, when the geir shows their sincerity, that you perform the conversion. But because of the fact that there are these stages of discouragement that need to occur at the beginning, so we can't call that a mitzvah. So why then, getting back to our question, well, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov punished, what was such a bad thing? So there are a couple of different theories that are advanced by some of the contemporary poskim. I remember once that Rav Nachum Eisenstein, who was the right-hand man of Rav Eliashiv, he's also from Chicago, right? All the great people are from Chicago, right? So Rav Nachum Eisenstein once came to the Beis Din of America to talk to me about Inyanei Geiros. He was very involved in the move to centralize conversion courts here in the United States, and there was one effort that was undertaken by an organization, EJF, I don't think it's around anymore, but around the same time, the Rabbinical Council of America was also organizing its own network of conversion courts, the GPS, and that is still operative, but the motivation and objective was the same, to provide a greater sense of order and a process with respect to the whole system of Geirus in Chutz Laaretz. So he was talking to me about some of the problems of performing a gear nowadays when you don't have sincerity on the part of the Geirim. And we got into a learned discussion about the idea of conversion for the sake of marriage. The Gemara in Yevamo says that you're not really supposed to convert somebody for the sake of marriage. You would say, b'di'evet kulam Geirim hei. If they do convert, so the conversion is considered to be valid, and there's a Tosfos over there, is the Afkuf Dalet. Maseches Yevamos, there's a Tosfos over there that says that it's even okay to accept a Geirim of that sort if you're able to establish that Sofon Lasos L'Shem Shemayim, that even though their initial motivation was for ulterior motives, if a Beis Din is able to establish that in the end, after learning about Judaism, they become committed and sincere, and would want to convert to Judaism, even if there wasn't a Jewish man or Jewish woman whom they were attracted to, that was bringing them into Judaism, even without the presence of those individuals, they would still want to convert to Judaism. So then it could be appropriate to perform the conversion. That really would be the basis alone to allow for conversions to Shem Ishus for the sake of marriage nowadays. But there's another problem about conversions for the sake of marriage. In other words, let's say somebody converts to Judaism because of the fact that they were attracted to a certain individual. So we say, okay, so if that's what Tosu says, if Sofon Lasos L'Shem Shemayim, if the Beis Din determines that their ultimate motivation is really 100% sincere, you really can't perform the conversion. The real problem that the Achronim dealt with wasn't really so much that case. Everybody thinks that that's the case that all the Achronim struggled with. That wasn't what the Achronim struggled with. They struggled with the fact that the Mishnah in Yevamo says that if somebody was suspected of having a romantic relationship already with, let's say you had a non-Jew who wanted to convert, and they were suspected of having a romantic relationship with a Jewish significant other, then they're not allowed to marry that person after the conversion. That was the problem. The problem was that you had people who were converting, and then they were marrying people with whom they had been romantically involved prior to the conversion process. So that's what's prohibited. That's really what we don't find a hetzer for that in the Gemara.
Why is what's the issue? Why can't the person, going to the Mishnah, why can't the person marry somebody they had a relationship with?
So there are two explanations in the Rishonim as to what the problem is. So one explanation in the Rishonim, it's all based on the Gemara and Yevamos. One explanation in the Rishonim is, I mean, it says that it's going to lead to Ikshus Peh. It's going to lead to Hasir Mimcha Ikshus Peh. It's a pasuk that says that you're supposed to dispel any type of rumor mongering that's going to arise as a result of the marriage that would ensue from that relationship. So one opinion says that people will say, oh, it was really true that they were romantically involved after all. So some of the Achronim said, okay, so if all we're worried is that people will substantiate the rumor, if we knew that they were living together beforehand, they were civilly married by the secular courts beforehand, so we don't have to worry about rumor mongering because it's not going to raise a greater level of suspicion that existed beforehand because everybody knew that they were living together, so then we don't have to worry about that problem. But then there's another sheet among the Rishonim that says, no, what are we worried about? If it turns out that the person who's converting, that the Beis Din is saying, oh, we're convinced that it's now L'Shem Shemayim, and then they're going to end up immediately after they convert, what's the first thing they're going to do the next day? They're going to have Chuppah V'Kiddushin with this Jewish person they were romantically involved with, so everyone's going to say, this wasn't really a valid conversion. This wasn't so sincere after all. It looks like they really only converted in order to marry this person, because look, that's the first thing they did right after they converted, was marry this person, so maybe it wasn't really a sincere conversion. So Yechonim said, so if that's the concern, so then maybe we can't really be made, then there would be no grounds to be makel, because you'd still have to worry about that. So Shlomo Kluger and other poskim said that nonetheless, it's better to be mekel, because otherwise they're going to go off the derech, and you're going to end up having an intermarriage. And if you really feel that they have the capacity to be sincere at the end of the day, so we'll take a chance. It's like for one of the formulations that this is based on a Tshuvas HaRambam, about a similar situation, about a shifchu converted, and there was a question whether she can marry the Jew that she was involved with. So the Rambam had said, Eis lasos l'shem meferu Torah secha. So they used a similar lashon. They said that mutav shiyocha basa shkutos temutos milecho basa nevelos. That it's better to eat basa from an animal that's shvach, an animal that's very weakly and sickly, than normally you would stay away from, say, an animal that's a misukenis. But strictly speaking, it's kosher. So it's better to eat an animal like that than to eat an animal that's a nevela. So they use a similar expression to be makel in these types of situations. So that's why the practice became to be makel about these types of conversions. But still, meikar adin, you're not really supposed to accept somebody who is only converting the shem ishus. It sounds like the whole story of Timna, that she wanted to convert because she wanted to marry somebody from Abraham's family. In fact, that's why in the end she latched on to Eliphaz, who was the son of Esav. So therefore, wasn't it correct for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to reject her? Wasn't she the sort of candidate that you are supposed to reject? Because it was for ulterior motives. So I was having this conversation with Rav Nachum Eisenstein. I think that's how we started. So Rav Nachum Eisenstein was bewailing all of these conversions that were for the sake of marriage. And somehow we got off on a theoretical discussion in which I remember saying at the time, I mean, could ask him if his recollection is the same in my conversation, but my recollection of the conversation, but my recollection is that I went into a whole discussion about how it really depended on whether a person was converting for the sake of marrying a particular individual, because what we were seeing more and more in the Beis Din, and this is what we see more and more nowadays as well, is there are a lot of women, a lot of young women, who want to convert to Judaism. In fact, the majority of converts today, at least within the system of the GPS, which we have, I think over 2,000 people have converted since the GPS was originated. So the majority is 75% of the converts are women. 75% of the converts are women. They don't need a bris milah, so it's easier, right? But 75% of the converts are women. And one of the major explanations given when we ask, why are you interested in converting to Judaism? Many of them are not involved with a man. But what attracts many of them, we're talking in many cases about young women, what attracts them to Judaism is Jewish family life. They love Jewish family life and values the stability of the home, the faithfulness of the home, the notion of the loyalty, the closeness between husband and wife, the way in which the family is brought up. So yes, when they convert, a large part of the motivation is they want to get married to a Jewish man. But they don't have a specific Jewish man in mind. It's just that they love the idea of what the Jewish family stands for. And of course, together with that, they also believe in the theology of Judaism and God and the fundamental principles. But this is something which they find very attractive about Judaism. So I suggested, and I don't think that I had a frame of reference at that point in time, but I suggested that maybe that's not considered to be conversion for the sake of marriage. That's considered to be conversion for the sake of Judaism. The fact that somebody is so attracted to what Judaism stands for Jewish family life, the woman is not interested in a particular man. She wants a Jewish husband because she believes feels very strongly in love with the notion of Jewish values and the Jewish family life. So that's converting for the sake of Judaism. So I thought that was perfectly valid. So I don't remember at the time that I had come across a tshuva by Rav Moshe about it. I don't think I could have come across a tshuva by Rav Moshe about it, because Chelek Tes, I don't think the ninth volume of the Igros Moshe, I don't think had been published at that time. And the tshuva that Rav Moshe wrote about this subject only appeared in Chelek Tes. Before that point in time, it was a letter that he had published in some journal that had not appeared in the Igros Moshe. So I found afterwards, but Moshe Feinstein wrote a letter in a journal which he said exactly the same thing. To say, Baruch Shekibanti. Chances are I probably had come across that letter somewhere and forgot that I had come across it, and it stuck in my brain, so I thought it was my own Kiddush. But I don't know. I really, to this day, I think it was my own Kiddush. I think I came across the letter by Rav Moshe afterwards. But Moshe gives this whole lamdus, gives this whole arichus. What was the problem? Why is it that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were punished for not accepting Timna? Because they thought that since she wanted to marry a Jewish man, that she didn't have a particular man in mind, but she wanted to marry a Jewish man, someone from Abraham's family, somebody who accepted the Jewish ideals and values. That's what she really wanted. So they felt that this was considered to be conversion l'shem mishus, that this was for the sake of marriage. But they made a mistake, he said, because really this was not considered to be conversion for the sake of marriage. This was considered to be conversion for the sake of Judaism, and that's why they should have accepted her candidacy, and that's why they were punished. I said, oh, Baruch Shekibati, that was really wonderful. So I subsequently discovered in the Chelek Tes of the Yigvas Moshe that this letter was published. It was originally in a Torah journal. It wasn't Tshuva, so it didn't appear in the earlier volumes of the Yigvas Moshe, but it appeared in a later volume of the Yigvas Moshe. So Rav Asher Weiss, in the Minchas Asher, has a different explanation of why Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were punished for not accepting Timna. I have the Minchas Asher. I don't have that part of the Tshuva here, but if you want to know where it is, it's Chelek Aleph, Simen Mem Tes, in the Shailos Tshuvas Minchas Asher. Minchas Asher deals with a different question. It deals with the question of whether whether a Beis Din has the right to reject a candidate because they don't like the candidate. The candidate is clearly committed, clearly knowledgeable about Torah mitzvahs that they have integrated into their lifestyle, a full-fledged observance of all of the mitzvahs, and the Beis Din thinks that if this person becomes a member of the Jewish community, they're going to observe Torah mitzvahs, but they're just a very irritating, annoying person. The Beis Din just doesn't like this person. They just, they don't have good social skills, they don't have good manners, they don't have good etiquette. Maybe they have a bit of a temper, they rub the Beis Din the wrong way. So the Beis Din doesn't want to convert to this person for side reasons. I think is the way that he puts it. So he says, does a Beis Din have the right to make that determination, or does the Beis Din have an obligation to convert somebody who satisfies all the prerequisites, who satisfies all the criteria? It's a very interesting question. I can tell you it comes up. Sometimes Beis Din just doesn't take a liking to a certain candidate, but they think that the person would probably be a full-fledged member of the community. In all respects, that's the problem. So they don't want this person as part of the community. So I would just be a little facetious, but they feel uncomfortable with this person's personality. So Rav Asher Weiss says that it could be that this was the issue with Timna. It could be that because Timna was from a chieftain's family, from the Seir, the chieftain of Seir, from that family. So Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov felt they don't want to get involved in all the politics. They'll convert her, and then, you know, she's got to be so involved in the whole political scene, and they'll get embroiled with the family of Seir and with all of the politics from there, and maybe there'll be politics, there'll be some resentment from people, members of that family, that she joined the faith altogether, so they just didn't want the whole political headache. So that's why they didn't accept her. So says Rav Asher Weiss. So it turns out that was mistaken, that really you don't have a right to reject a candidate for side reasons. And if she was otherwise completely sincere, just the mere fact that there would be political headaches was not a sufficient reason to reject her candidacy, and that's the reason why they were punished. So that's also a very interesting explanation of the reason why it was considered to be improper to reject her candidacy, because both of these have a local lemaisa of ramifications. However you understand, it's going to have a local lemaisa of ramifications. So with this other organization, I had this taina, because this all starts in the Tosfos. Tosfos talks about how it was proper to accept, they should have accepted Timna, but it's improper if you're going to recruit people. You're going to recruit people to convert to Judaism, so that's improper. So I had a taina. I was invited by this other Gayrus organization to speak at one of their conventions. It was very nice. I liked all the people, and I thought it was nice they invited me to speak at one of the conventions. So I went and I spoke at one of the conventions. They had some very eminent Talmidei Chachamim who were involved in this other organization. But I had some concerns, because what was the one of the motifs of this organization? That we have to stop the spread of intermarriage. That intermarriage is very bad. There was somebody, I think, who gave a lot of money to this organization because his goal was that we should do something about intermarriage. So the way in which they were confronting the plague of intermarriage was through conversion. that why don't we try to convert as many people as possible who have intermarried, meaning that the non-Jewish partners should be converted to Judaism, and that way we'll be able to put an end to intermarriage. So the obvious problem with this approach, that's what it looked like. Somehow there were almost like two different strands of the organization. One strand of the organization was this outreach with respect to intermarriage. That's what all the big ads, you know, seemed to emphasize. And the other was that they were doing very good work in terms of trying to have a centralized system for gear, publishing Torah journals about gear. All of that was very, very nice. But the messaging seemed to be about doing outreach for intermarried couples. So I got up at this convention and I gave a whole speech. I wrote an article with similar ideas afterwards. I gave a whole speech about how we have to be very careful that we are fulfilling our mandate of, number one, Dokin is a Ger Gimel Pamim, but number two, that we're not really supposed to be doing outreach to be recruiting converts. That if you have individuals who are part of an intermarriage, the non-Jewish partner of an intermarriage comes to the Beis Din and says to the Beis Din, I really want to convert. So on a case-by-case basis, there might be room to be makel. As we mentioned, if the Beis Din feels it's sofan lasos l'shem shemayim. But I brought the example from the days of anyone who reads Tanakh. So when Ezra and Nehemiah returned from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, so they saw that a lot of the Jewish men had intermarried. They had all married non-Jewish women. So I said, if you look at the passage in Ezra, it doesn't say that they said to all of the men, oh, we have to convert your wives. We have to have a whole movement in which we're going to convert your wives so we'll be able to put an end to intermarriage. It said that they told them to drive out their wives. You got to get rid of all your wives. You got to banish them. You got to divorce them. That it shouldn't look like hitivu pushim es hadavar, like you're putting a rubber stamp upon intermarriage. If you're going to make it into a major mass movement, people say, oh, it's not so bad to get intermarried because everyone's going to be very lovey-dovey to me anyway in terms of trying to bring me back to Judaism and bring the spouse to Judaism. So therefore, it's not so bad. I'll go out to the college campuses, I'll find a non-Jewish girl, and everyone's going to love me anyway and have all these conventions in which they talk about how they have to do kibbutz and outreach to me. So I said, I had a little concern about this. And it wasn't only my concern. I saw there was a tshuva by the Tzitz Eliezer. I think it was in Chelek Hei, the Tzitz Eliezer, in which the Tzitz Eliezer expressed I'll give you the exact Maror Malkum, I don't have it on me the second. The Tzitz Eliezer expressed the same concern of Hitivu Pushim Es Hadavar, that if you're going to have some large movement in which you're going to recruit the non-Jewish partners of intermarried couples to convert to Judaism, so it will look like, it's really okay in our minds, and it's easy to fix, and we're just going to go out and try to, and we'll be makari of everybody, we'll just try to outreach in order to bring these people closer to Judaism, and show them how much we love them, and it's all going to be hunky-dory and just fine. So I thought that was problematic. So I just expressed my concerns. I said, I know everyone here, and I still believe everyone was very sincere. You're dealing with Gevaldik Talmid Chachamim, who were involved in this enterprise. It's not meant as a criticism. It was just a note of caution that I was injecting. So one of the Rabbanim, who was one of the leaders of this particular movement, turned to me after I gave my speech, and he said, I want you to know that we only deal with couples where the non-Jewish partner has specifically already approached us and indicated that they're interested in conversion only. Then we deal with them. They were aware of the issue, but I said I'm still concerned about the type of message that's being broadcast. So out of Yom Hazeh, I have the same concern. One of my colleagues gave a wonderful speech about conversion somewhere, and he was talking about, he's very involved in conversion himself, and he was talking about how in his experience he found what was a very interesting phenomenon, particularly in the college campuses, is that you would have some Jewish fellow who was not so engaged in his religion. We're not talking about somebody who even grew up Orthodox necessarily. Sometimes they did go to an Orthodox day school. Sometimes they went to a Salman Schechter, or they didn't really have any formal Jewish schooling. And then they go to a college campus and they meet a non-Jewish girl, and they don't really want to intermarry per se, so therefore they start having conversations about how maybe the non-Jewish girl that they met on the college campus will start considering conversion. Then the non-Jewish girl starts to read the books about Judaism, and she approaches the local Beis Din, in his case, an Orthodox Beis Din. She decides that she's going to do it. She wants to do it right. She wants to do it, you know, in the proper fashion, with a proper, full-fledged observance and commitment to Judaism. And in the process, she raises up the level of the observance of the Jewish fellow who had dated her in the first place. Because one of the concerns that the poskim always expressed about the intermarriage is, how do you expect the non-Jewish partner to become sincere in their fulfillment of mitzvos when the Jew, who clearly was willing to date them in the first place, is not so observant? So how could you expect their observance level to be greater than the Jewish partner? But he said what ends up happening is that the Jewish partner learns more about their own Judaism in the process, and they also become like a Baal Tshuva. It's like a combination, Geirus Baal Tshuva process. And as the girl learns about Judaism, so her boyfriend also learns about Judaism. They grow together, and it's such a wonderful thing that this person who was completely not observant beforehand, now because he met the non-Jewish girl who brings him up to the highest level, because she has to reach such a high level to be worthy of conversion. So he brings, she brings him up to the level of full-fledged observance. So he becomes a Baal Tshuva in a way that he wouldn't have become had he met a Jewish girl on campus. Had he met a Jewish girl on campus who was just as non-observant as him, so he would have married the non-Jewish girl, and they'd have two non-observant people, and they would have no, they wouldn't have the same motivation to be Baal Tshuva. So he said, as a passing line in this speech that he gave, as a passing line, he said, so maybe this is like something to recommend, that if you have somebody who's like not a an observant boy and he goes to college campus, you recommend it. He said, it's a good thing. You should meet a non-Jewish girl, because then she'll motivate him to become a Baal Tshuva, because she's going to want to go to an Orthodox year, and you know, and she'll therefore become so enchanted with Torah mitzvah, so she's going to cause him to become enchanted with Torah mitzvah. So he said it like a little bit of a joke. Then he asked me afterwards what I thought of his speech. I said, it's a wonderful speech, but I don't think you should broadcast it, because I think that this line sends the wrong message. It's the same idea. Said that even if that would end up being the end result, intermarriage, or the possibility of intermarriage, or the notion of a Jewish boy looking to date a non-Jewish girl, or vice versa, is so anathema to our religion that I would say it's, that if somebody would ask me the question, here I'm going to say something bold and radical, I get into trouble for this. I don't think I should. That if somebody would ask me, is it better for a boy to who's looking to date a girl, a Jewish boy is looking to date a Jewish girl, to date a non-observant Jewish girl, or to date a non-Jewish girl who has an interest, who has expressed an interest in converting to Judaism and doing it, you know, in the proper fashion? I would say it's better to date the non-observant Jewish girl. I don't think that we should ever do anything that would appear to put an imprimatur on the notion of intermarriage or having a romantic dating relationship between Jew and non-Jew. Intermarriage is one of the fundamental sins, really, that characterize our faith, that marrying out of faith is one of the major averus, which the Gemara says that if you're entering into Gan Eden, so one of the things that they check at the door, they check you have a bris milah, they check where you intermarry. You intermarried, so you get turned away. This is part of being in Klal Yisrael, means that you marry within the faith. It's very, very important to marry within the faith. Okay, so that introduction aside, yes.
Do they ever keep any records of people who convert to Judaism, 10 years out, they're still Jewish?
They left, went back.
Percentage-wise?
One of the things that's very important, you know, we were speaking last time, and thank you, because we spoke about, the other thing that we spoke about last time were the major ingredients of conversion, right? We spoke about the major ingredients. Let's review. There were four major ingredients, prerequisites, in order for a conversion to be valid. Anybody remember? We could say, so, Mila, circumcision for men, only for men. Tzvila, immersion in a mikvah for everybody. Three, it has to be in front of a valid Beis Din. You need a valid Beis Din. And four, you need Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos. You need an acceptance of the yoke of commandments. So those were the four things that we mentioned last time. So the acceptance of the yoke of commandments is something that we take very seriously. That means that there has to be a long-term commitment that a person is going to observe Torah and Mitzvos. So there were some poskim who spoke about, what if, in order to save an intermarriage, so you compromise a little bit. You know, maybe you say, so it doesn't look like the non-Jewish partner. Let's say you have a Jewish man who's dating a non-Jewish woman. If you perform the conversion, so they'll remain within the Jewish community. They won't be so observant. If you don't perform the conversion, so then it will be a complete intermarriage and they'll fall off the face of the map. So maybe we could be a little bit lenient and lax about Kabbalos or Mitzvos. Rav Kook has a tshuva along these lines, and Rav Kook, this is actually in the materials, that's source 18, the Das Kohen. So Rav Kook says that we had explained, how is it possible for a Beis Din to function to perform Geirus nowadays? So we said that Tosvos in Gittin explains that it's based on Shlichus Ayoka Avdinan, that we serve as the agents of the original rabbinical judges. Because we said that if you need a Beis Din, then it would seem that you would need a Beis Din made up of proper smuchin of judges who receive smicha directly from Moshe Rabbeinu, from someone who received from the chain that went back to Moshe Rabbeinu. We don't have that chain anymore. So how do our dayanim perform geirus nowadays? So Tosa says, no problem. Shlichusayo de kamaika avdino. We're considered to be the agents of the dayanim of yesteryear. That's what he said. So Rav Kook said, so if we're operating based on the principle of shlichusayo ka avdinan, so Rav Kook said that we have a principle in Shlichus, the Tekune Shadarti Falola Avuse, that I appoint an agent in order to do things right and not to do things wrong. So if one of the prerequisites of performing a conversion is that you require Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos, so a Beis Din that decides that it's going to skimp on that particular feature is violating their shlichus, they're violating their agency. Once they're violating their agency, so then they're not valid agents anymore. If they're not valid agents anymore, you don't have a valid Beis Din anymore. If you don't have a valid Beis Din anymore, you don't have a valid Geirus. So therefore, a Beis Din doesn't have the right to make that calculation. They don't have, there was a tshuva by Rav David Zvi Hoffman in the Malami Lahoil. He has a lot of very innovative tshuvas, a lot of very original tshuvas of David Zvi Hoffman. And one of his tshuvas, he suggests that in a situation like this, you could say, Chate Bishvil Sheyiske, that it's okay that we're going to do something wrong to perform a conversion that is missing Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos, Kadesh Yiske, so that the Jewish person who would otherwise be committing an intermarriage is going to be saved from an intermarriage. But how can you do that? The whole shlichus would fall apart if you're going to compromise on what the requirements for conversion are. So it's interesting, the context in which Rav Kook expressed this opinion was speaking about a ger katan. Because one of the types of conversions that a Beis Din can perform is with respect to a young child. A young child also has to go through all of the stages of conversion. Let's say a Beis Din converts a young... Why would a Beis Din convert a young child? A couple of possibilities. Either the whole family is converting. You have a father and a mother and their little children and they're all converting together. That happens sometimes. We've had conversions like that. Or you have a situation where a Jewish man and woman are not able to conceive and bear their own children, and they adopt a non-Jewish child. They adopt a non-Jewish child, and then they want to convert the non-Jewish child. So how does that child convert? Well, if it's a male, it has circumcision. Both a male and a female, they have immersion in the mikvah. It's done before a Beis Din. But what about Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos? How is a 10-month infant going to accept the yoke of commandments? They can barely understand what you're saying to them. You say, oh, you're going to keep Shabbos, and you're going to keep Kashrus, and you're going to, you know, keep all the laws of Shiluach HaKad, and you're going to make broken. The 10-month infant doesn't understand what you're saying. Ga-ga-ga. It doesn't, what kind of Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos do you have over there?
When they get older.
Even when the child is 5 years old, and they understand a little bit, they still don't have Das. So the Gemara in Ksuvos and Daf Yud Aleph says Ger Katan Mapilin also Al Das Beis Din. If you have a young child, so it's possible to do Geirus based on the Beis Din furnishing the Das. The Beis Din essentially furnishes that commitment on behalf of the child. There is a discussion in Rishonim as to whether when the child reaches, let's say it's a boy, the boy reaches the age of 13, girl reaches the age of 12, do they do Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos at that point in time? The answer is no. We don't require a new Beis Din to be convened for them to do Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos. There seems to be a Ritva that talks about something like that. But that's not the practice of the Bate Din. That's not done pretty much anywhere. That when they reach the age of maturity, we don't call them on the phone and say, by the way, you know, you had a gevurah when you were 2 years old, when you were 10 months old, you have to come back to the Beis Din right before your bar mitzvah, and you have to make a statement, a declaration in front of the Beis Din that you're accepting the yoke of mitzvahs. There's no such requirement. It's not required. We say that the Beis Din furnishes the das. The Beis Din furnishes the das based on a determination by the Beis Din that it's a zechus, that it is an unqualified benefit for the child to be brought into the fold of Judaism, and we apply the principle of zachon yadam shlo befanah, that you're allowed to convey a benefit to somebody even if they don't have the das, that they don't have the awareness or they don't have the knowledge that this benefit is being conferred. If you know that it is an unqualified, unmitigated benefit for them, so you can confer this benefit upon them. So it's like I can accept a gift on behalf of somebody, because that's often the other. I assume a person would want a gift that I know that this is a delicious candy bar, and I'm going to lift up this candy bar, or it's a set of sfarim that I know that the person would really enjoy, or it's an expensive set of china that the person would really enjoy, and I can accept it on their behalf, and that's considered to be like it transfers into their possession. What if they say afterwards, when they find out about it, they say, I don't want it after all? So then does it still go into their possession? So we say no. They have the right to reject it. If at the moment that they find out about it, they reject it, that they're tzoveach, they cry out, and they say that they don't want it. So then the Gemara says, so that it doesn't pass into their possession. So that's why Satosva says that's really the mechanism over here when we say that a Beis Din has the ability to make this determination on behalf of a minor child of Mapilin also Adas Beis Din. It works through the mechanism of Zachon Yadam Shlo Befanam, that the Beis Din is conveying a benefit because they feel it would be beneficial to bring this child into the community of the Jewish people. They think it would be a benefit. So, therefore, when the child becomes, so this is what you were referring to, Moshe, when the child becomes an adult, so then the Gemara says, Higdila Yekolim Limchos. Go to the Gemara, quotes of Yosef, says when they become adults, they have the right to reject this status. It doesn't mean that's not a Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos. That's a rejection. That's their right to reject. As soon as they have the understanding of the benefit that's been conferred upon them, they could say that they don't want this benefit. It doesn't require a Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos. It just requires that they don't reject. That they don't reject the Judaism. So as long as they know that they were converted, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, they have to know that they were converted. So as long as that they know that they were converted, and let's say they turn 13. So where are they? Let's say it's a boy. He's in 7th grade. He's going to a yeshiva. So he went to 7th grade yesterday. He was 12 years old and 353 days, whatever, 354 days in the Jewish year. So he was one day short of his bar mitzvah. And now his parents sit him down and they say, Johnny, we just have to share with you that you were converted when you were an infant. But don't worry, if you don't want to be Jewish, you can reject it right now. That's a question. Do they have to also share with the child that he has a right to reject? Or is it enough if they share with the child that the child was converted, even if they don't tell the child that the child had a right to reject the Judaism? That's not explicit anywhere in the Gemara, and it's not so explicit really in the poskim for the most part. And Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Shechter, my Rebbe, quotes in his Sfarim that Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, was unsure about whether the child needs to know that they have a right to reject or not. That's sort of interesting. Sure. Supposedly, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, I've heard this from reliable sources, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik held that it wasn't necessary for the child to know that they have a right to reject. Others say, yeah, it might be necessary, and for the child to know, therefore, that you should share with the child that they have the right to reject. So let's leave aside that question as to whether the child needs to know that they have a right to reject. Let's assume the child did know they had a right to reject, and they were told all of this when they were one day short of their bar mitzvah. And that the previous day they went to school, and the next day when they become bar mitzvah, they go to school. They go to school, and they go to minyan, and they daven, and they're sitting in all of their classes. So therefore, that's considered to be that's a lack of rejection, because they continue to fulfill all of the Jewish practices that they had fulfilled the previous day. The previous day, they woke up, they did Negel Basar, now they became Bar Mitzvah, they knew that they were converted, and they have a right to reject their Judaism, and they still woke up and said Modani, and they did Negel Basar. So we say, so therefore, that shows that they did not reject their Judaism. If the next day, when 2 days after their bar mitzvah, they decide they're not going to do the Ego Vaster anymore, it's too late. It's too late. Then already that's considered to be that there was no mechal.
Why why would the Rambam work?
The Rambam works because it's a rejection of the Sechus. If we say, Zachon Le'Adam Shalafarim, just like if I accept the gift on your behalf, if when you find out about the gift, you decide that you don't want the gift, so then it turns out, retroactively, that there was no Sechiyah. Then it turns out, retroactively, the gift was never yours.
You don't say Batla
Daito in Sechiyah? You don't say Batla Daito, no. There are certain circumstances, like the Bahag talks about, if a child converts together with his parents, that such an unmitigated Sechus to remain together with your parents, that you converted together with your parents, then he says, then you can't be Mocha when you turn 13. We assume pretty much in all cases, a child has the right to be Mocha when they turn 13. Maybe in the case where, there's another case where a child converts when they're a fetus in the mother's womb. The mother is pregnant. The mother is pregnant and she converts together with the fetus in her womb. So then a lot of the poskim say that the child is considered to be converted at the moment of the mother's conversion when they're a fetus, but when they come out of the mother's womb, from the moment of birth, they're already Jewish. Since they're already Jewish from that point in time, so then when they turn 13, they can't reject. They turn 13 or 12, they can't reject their Jewishness anymore.
Are all adoptions?
Yeah.
So if adoptive parents don't want to tell the kid he's adopted, that's improper?
That's improper. Moshe says, let's say that they don't tell the child that the child was adopted and converted. The child finds out when he's 25 years old.
Yeah.
At that point, he's 25 years old, and there are a lot of temptations when you're 25 and you're in the midst of your youthful vigor. Let's say he's a college student. He finds out he's 20 years old. He finds out that he was converted. He has the right to reject his Judaism. So Moshe said, it's more likely to reject the Judaism at that point because he figures he'll have a lot of fun. He doesn't have to fulfill the mitzvahs and he can do all of these different averos. That would be averos if he was Jewish, but not necessarily if he's not Jewish. So Rav Moshe says that's why it's a good idea to tell the child as soon as possible. They're much less likely to reject their Judaism if they, when they're 13 and when they're 12 than when they turn 25. So so that's what he recommends. Wait, so you had a question?
But he could be Mocha. He could be Mocha.
I was asking if there's a time frame where they have to reject by.
It would have to be at the time that they turn bar mitzvah, basically. They talk about what if the child circulates in a sphere where the Judaism that's practiced is not so robust, that they live in a Jewish community, but it's not such an observant Jewish community when they turn bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah. So Rav Chaim Moser has a tshuva in the Achies, okay, the Gimel Simon Chavches, I think, about such a situation where he says that if a maybe Lamed, where he says that if a child just observes Judaism the way that child, he or she, understands Judaism, that might be good enough, even if it's not what we would consider to be glatt. It's not what we consider to be Mahadrin or Mahudr. In terms of their level of observance, maybe that would be good enough. That comes up from time to time. But before we even get to that threshold, Rav Kook says, we're getting back to the tshuva of Rav Kook, he says that the Bez that needs to determine, it's a sechus, at the time of the actual conversion, when the Bezin performs the conversion, they have to determine that it's really going to be beneficial for the child to be brought into the Jewish faith, that they're going to be living a life of mitzvos and not a life of averos. If they see that this child is being raised in an environment in which they're not going to be Shoma Shabbos, they're not going to be Shoma Kashrus, they're not going to keep anything, so then it's not a zuchus. So if Bezin can't make the determination, they'll do the geiris anyway, he says, because that would be a violation of shlichus ayah. They have a shlichus. The shlichus requires that they do their job. Their job requires that Mapilin also Adas Bezdin means that the Bezdin has to establish that it's really going to be meritorious and beneficial to bring this child into the fold. And if they determine that, based on the objective evidence, it's not going to be meritorious or beneficial to bring the child into Judaism because the child is going to be violating a Beres, so then they really shouldn't do it. So that's his argument. But Moshe Feinstein was very makel about this particular issue, about converting young children. He said it's always going to be a zechus to bring a young child into Judaism. Because if he's not going to know any better, he's not going to be punished for it because he doesn't know any better. And whatever he or she does perform, they'll get credit for performing the mitzvah, so therefore it's a good thing. He doesn't recommend doing it l'chatchila, but he thinks that the conversion might be valid post facto under those circumstances. The only thing that he recommends in a particular tshuva, I think it was for a Jewish community in Argentina, where there was a school in which there were a number of children in this Jewish school who came from intermarried couples. And the question was whether they could teach Torah to non-Jewish children who had non-Jewish mothers and Jewish fathers. So he said, I have a better solution. You don't have to worry about teaching Torah to non-Jews. Just convert them all. Convert them. Have them all convert. Even though they're not being raised in homes, which are Shomer Mitzvos necessarily, if they're going to go to the local Orthodox school and they're going to get an education of Torah Mitzvos, so then it will be a zechus because there's a much better chance that they're going to observe Torah Mitzvos afterwards. That's a big question. So some of the contemporary posts can say that if you know that even if they go to a particular school, 95% of the children who come out of a particular school are not going to be Shomer Torah Mitzvos afterwards. So you can't really say, even according to Moshe's reasoning, you can't really say that it's going to be a zechus. You have to look at the statistical facts. So there's a question that arises as well with respect to the case of Mubarish and Iskaira. Let's say that the Bez then, with respect to the pregnant woman who converts and has the fetus in her womb. So we said that's a case where the conversion just works automatically, right? You don't even need a Das Bezdin. It just works because the Bezdin, what? The Bezdin knew that the woman was pregnant. So the No de Behuda has a question. The No de Behuda's question is, what if the Bezdin didn't know that the woman was pregnant? So does the conversion work for the child or not? So No de Behuda said, I'm not really sure. I'm not sure. He has a comment, Dogum involved with the Hilchos gave him, says, I'm not really sure whether the conversion works. So the Yaruch HaShulchan says, what do you mean? Of course it works because we hold, the Yaruch HaShulchan assumes it's a machlokis, whether uba yaruch imahu, uba lav yaruch imahu, whether a fetus is considered to be a limb of the mother or not. So if he assumes a limb of the mother, so the mother converted, all of the mother's limbs converted. So he says, we assume uba yaruch imahu, and therefore the conversion works for the blood as well. Rav Soloveitchik held that the conversion should work for the blood for a different reason, that if a child is born to a Jewish mother, of course the child is Jewish. So by the time the child is born, when the mother gives birth, so the child comes out at that point in time, how can you say the child's not Jewish? The child's Jewish. So the requirement for the child to have an immersion, because when the child was conceived, he or she was not Jewish, that's just a mitzvah. Like we mentioned last week, that according to many poskim, I think the Rashba says this, the idea, according to the Maskanas, the Gemara and Krisus, the requirement for a ger to bring a korban is not one of the prerequisites for conversion, it's just an extra mitzvah. So Rav Soloveitchik held in the case of Mubarish and Iskaira, the child doesn't need an immersion in order to be Jewish. The child is Jewish because they're born from a Jewish mother, because they come out of a Jewish mother from birth. The reason a child needs immersion in a mikvah is because there's a mitzvah for such a child in that particular circumstance, since the child was not conceived when they were Jewish, so therefore they have to immerse in a mikvah. But they're Jewish either way, so therefore he didn't think that it should depend upon the Bezdin knowing that the mother is pregnant and the mother is not pregnant. It's not a prerequisite for conversion, that the Bezdin has to be involved in a conversion process for the child. It's just that the child has this mitzvah of immersion.
If the child was a boy or a girl?
It shouldn't matter, because then the child, if it's a boy, the child still needs a milah, but the Rav would say the milah is a milah of a Jewish child. It's not done for conversion. The child is a Jewish anyway. That's a Kiddush. That's not the child to understand it that way.
What about becoming a leaner?
It would have a nafkamina whether you could perform the bris milah on Shabbos or not. That's the machlokas poskim, whether you could perform it. Is it a bris milah of a child born Jewish, in which case you can't perform it on Shabbos, is what many poskim say, or is it a bris milah of a ger, in which case you can't perform the bris milah on Shabbos? Many poskim say you can't perform it on Shabbos.
What if the father was a Kohen?
The father was a Kohen.
Would the child still be a Kohen?
If the father was a Kohen, then the child for sure but would need a geris, because the geris of the mother was invalid. Because how could you do a geris for a woman who's married to a Kohen?
No, she wasn't married.
What?
She wasn't married to him.
No, but then how could you do that? If he's the father, so then... She wasn't married to him. She had an affair with a man who was a Kohen. So I don't know that we perform a conversion. That's we have to determine that she did tshuva. I don't know, doing something
but
like that.
Would he be a Kohen?
What? No, he wouldn't be a Kohen. If you have a Kohen who has relations with a non-Jewish woman and has a child, so the child is not Jewish, and then child converts, it's not a Kohen.
But he would be, but according to...
It's not a Cholol either.
He would be Jewish because he wasn't born yet, according to that opinion.
Yeah, Rahimo.
Yeah, even though the mother wasn't Jewish when she was with the Kohen, so.
But when she was conceived, then when she conceived the child, she wasn't Jewish, so there's no connection to the father in that case, no connection to the father.
Last time we talked about Sarara, So right. I mean, the psukim there are based, like you said, Shevet and Yehuda are based on the father. So would this case be an issue where Leidata B'Kedusha Be'en Arayas B'Kedusha?
If it's Ein HaRasa B'Kedusha V'Leidasa B'Kedusha, so that's also considered. So then you say, if we say that the child is considered to be born Jewish, so maybe you could be more makel about Sroah in such a case. Maybe. Maybe you could be more makel about Sroah in such a case. That's an interesting question. Maybe. Yep. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to discuss this later,
but what about if this katan who was brought up Jewish and is already older finds out that their parents' conversion wasn't a halachic conversion?
So then they have to do an upgrade. They have to do another conversion.
How do we view them? Do we try to discourage them, or do we avoid discouraging them?
No, because some of the posts we say, if a person grew up their entire life Jewish, so what do we say with respect to Rus? We said, see, somebody their entire life has been striving to become Jewish, so then you don't discourage them, then you bring them closer. So somebody their entire life, they're brought up Jewish, they have an interest in being Jewish. When they find out that they may not be halakhically Jewish, they're still interested in continuing their Judaism, so their whole life has been a quest to become part of the Jewish people. So such a person you shouldn't discourage, in my humble opinion. Such a person you have to help along more. Such a person requires assistance. Their whole life they've been they've been striving towards being Jewish and acting Jewish.
Actually have the proper gerus,
yeah. But you should help them.
They're allowed to mechallel Shabbos.
They should be mechallel Shabbos a little bit because we say a ger shishavas chayv misa, that a ger is not allowed
to. They should be
a little bit. That's a whole discussion. How much Shabbos should they break? And if it's only a suffix, then maybe they're really Jewish, so then we wouldn't have them directly be Mechal Shabbos. Maybe they'll do some Tircha, maybe that's good enough, or maybe they could do something Motzei Shabbos, and the way their days are computed is that the nights follow the days, as opposed to our calendar, so the different ways of approaching it. So what I want to do next time, in Mirtz Hashem, is I've set the table with a number of these different scenarios we discussed. What if the Bez then wants to reject the candidacy of somebody who has somebody where they have side reasons not to convert them? I spoke about, does the Bez then need to know that a woman who's pregnant is pregnant at the time, so that the conversion will work for the child? I want to put together these different scenarios, and I also spoke about, does a Bezdin have some latitude in deciding that it's going to relax the standards a little bit when it comes to Kabbalah, some mitzvahs, and things of that sort? So I wanted to unify all of these different questions under one theme in terms of a chakira as to the nature of the role that the Bezdin plays in the Geirus process. So Mirtz Hashem, we'll discuss that next time. Okay.